Hello and welcome back to Movies and Mixtapes with me, Molly Mo, and the sexy Mad Waters.
Heyo.
Heyo.
What up?
Yeah, what up? It's been a long, long time since we've recorded a podcast. We've both been busy with life and whatnot.
Just hard vibing.
Yeah, just hard vibing. So it's been maybe 2 months now?
Way too long. To be fair, we've both been quite busy.
Yeah, I'm actually working now.
And a lot has happened. I mean, we had a failed holiday.
A failed holiday. That didn't happen. nearly went to Spain. And
yeah, probably, sad time.
Probably a good thing we didn't go, though.
Yeah.
And I'm back on night shifts. You're back in Cardiff.
Yeah. That I am.
Okay, right. We're very excited to get back on the horse, so to speak. And this next film we've got is fantastic. It's for our Romance Week, and it's the film that I suggested, which is True Romance.
Hell yeah.
Brum, brum, brum. We watched it together, via FaceTime about a month and a half ago.
It was a very messy watch. I mean, I was absolutely bladdered, and you were stoned out your fucking mind. So, yeah, it was an interesting viewing experience.
You had to rewatch it, which is probably a good thing.
I did.
Yeah, but I've seen it so many times before.
Half of the reason was obviously because I was very drunk the first time I watched it, but obviously the timing. This was 2 months ago. This is like mid-July.
Oh God, that is a long time ago.
Yeah.
We're bad podcasters.
Yeah, we're just inconsistent.
We're going to podcast to hell.
But we have very sexy voices, so we're made for it.
what do you reckon would be in podcast hell? Do you reckon it would just be like...
Podcast hell.
Like a continuous broken connection, white noise in the background.
I mean, it feels like we have that already. Every time we try and ring each other, like, the Wi-Fi gods are like, no!
Not today!
These two must not join union.
But so we have.
Maybe we're already there. Maybe we've always been there.
Maybe. Oh, damn. Wow. Okay. We are digressing. And I want to ask you some questions about this film.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to give our viewers a brief synopsis of the film for those who haven't seen?
Yes, I would. So it's the 1993 film directed by Tony Scott, and the screenplay was written by Quentin Tarantino. It's starring Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette. It's also featuring Gary Oldman, who is fantastic. He plays this kind of crazy dreadlock drug dealer / pimp, which is a really weird look on him, but kind of hot.
It's a mood.
It's weirdly.
It's weird. Like, I didn't know it was him to begin with, and then I was like, fuck, it's Gary Oldman.
I've also come to realise I think I fancy Gary Oldman. Like,
I mean, what do you mean you've come to realise? I mean, you have seen the Harry Potter film.
Yeah, he's pretty
Sirius
hot.
Sirius Black.
Seriously! Fucking... He's hot.
He's seriously black.
Yeah, anyway, back to the cast. We've also got a bit of Christopher Walken in it, and his cameo is just... I think when they say it's not about big parts, it's about big actors.
Yeah.
He completely defines that in this film.
Definitely.
He's got like one scene and he completely steals the show. Anyway, so it's about these two young people who happen to meet and they fall in love. And it turns out that Patricia Arquette's character is a prostitute that was hired by Christian Slater's boss to kind of give him a good time for the night. And she ends up falling in love with him very head over heels. They get married. It's very exciting. And they have to get her out of her pimp's life. And as they do that, they steal a frickin' ton of drugs by accident.
As you do.
They pick up a suitcase thinking that it's got all of her clothes and, like, you know, trinkets and stuff in, and it turns out it's got like a metric ton of cocaine in there.
A fun time.
So then they end up getting chased by the police and by the bad guys. It's a very exciting film. It's very Quentin Tarantino-esque, and the aesthetics are fantastic, and it's even got a bit of Brad Pitt in there as well.
It does.
He's like the stoner housemate that just like kind of sits there doing that.
Yeah, he's a big vibe in it.
Yeah.
I love his character.
But yeah, it's I would say it's actually heavily a character film.
Definitely.
But, you know, it's got some great storylines that interlay over one another, and it's also got a fantastic gunfight scene at the end.
That's true.
So, yeah, we're going to get on with it. I want to know, did you like it, Matt?
I did, very much so. So when you announced you were going to show me this, I was like really happy, as this film has been on my watch list for literally like years. And I didn't know, I don't know how I hadn't gotten around to it before now.
I know, I'm so surprised you've never seen it before.
yeah, it was just one of those ones I just like kept pushing back for some reason.
Yeah,
obviously it's such like a lauded film culturally, like it's considered, you know, a big old cult classic, so I knew kind of going into it what how like highly regarded it was.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't influence how I felt about it, but I loved it. I thought it was so much fucking fun. Like, it's so Tarantino. Like,
yeah.
The characters are cool. The script is like really slick and fast. The set pieces are like jokes. The style of the film is great, as you said. Like, for a large quantity of the film, it seems to carry this kind of kooky 90s, almost like tropical theme to it.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun.
Even the score as well, which
is
made by Hans Zimmer, it's just really obscure and you wouldn't put it with the film, but it works so well.
Yeah, it's very cult. Like, everything's a bit weird and jangled, but everything just clicks in a weird way.
Yeah.
And the film kind of radiates this kind of chaotic energy, which it just kind of runs with, and it's great. I really did like it.
Yeah, the chaotic energy is the big part why I like it.
Even more so on rewatch.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. So do you think you like it more now that you've rewatched it?
Yeah, I find that with cult films though. Like, I felt very similar to From Dusk Till Dawn, another Tarantino pen film that wasn't directed by him.
Yeah.
But like with cult films, I find it takes like one or two more watches and maybe like a little bit of time between them.
Yeah.
To like fully grasp and engage with them.
Yeah, I agree.
So like it's really interesting watching them at different stages or ages in your life. So I think True Romance has the potential to warm up even like further on me as like I rewatch it as I like
grow up. As an adult, we are adults, but
as
an adult.
As an adult, a 22-year-old says to another 22-year-old.
Yeah. No, I really like it. And when I first watched it, I basically immediately fell in love with the film. And then when I did media studies at A-level, I basically just tried to copy. Remember, we had to write scripts for our A-level.
I know you've liked it for like a long time.
And I was like properly obsessed. So so I basically just tried to rewrite the script and do this sort of like Bonnie and Clyde romance story. But I had these characters in mind when I wrote the script. And if I read back the script, it's probably terrible. I don't even have a copy of it anymore. And that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. I used to do that with like stuff I really liked. Just basically
copy.
Just copy and paste. But like change like little things and be like, oh yeah, it's mine.
Yeah. It was dumb. But anyway, so how many stars out of 5 are you going to give this film?
When it comes to rating, I'd probably give it like a strong 4.
Nice. I thought, I think.
As I said, it has the potential to warm up on me even further. Like the film, it's basically asking for repeat watches just because there's so much to it.
Yeah.
It's very rich. There's plenty to warrant revisiting it. Like the whole film oozes style and charm. Like all the cast are great. The soundtrack's amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously. And the driving narrative of the movie is like engaging. So
yeah,
I'm going to say 4, but it could go even higher.
Okay. I like that. I thought you were going to say 4. I'm not going to lie.
Strong 4.
Yeah, okay.
Like it's more towards a 4.5 than a 3.5.
If we're going to get really specific, it's like a 4.3.
Yeah, it's like a strong 4, not a weak 4.
Okay, I like that. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was your favourite scene in the film?
That's a hard one, because this film is just like one fun scene after another. But
yeah.
I mean, ultimately, I'd say it's between 2, I think.
Okay.
Like, first one, kind of obvious, but for good reason, is the scene between Christopher Walken and Dennis Hopper.
Oh, that is my favourite scene. It's just
The sort of interrogation torture scene. You know, it's got these two amazing established actors facing up against one another with some really just top tier, amazing, funny, intense dialogue.
The whole scene is like watching two dogs growl at each other.
Yeah,
it's so fantastic.
It's so like witty and just. Just, it's very cool.
It is very cool.
It's like it was lifted out of a noir film, that scene.
Yeah, it really does.
Like, you could put that in black and white and it wouldn't feel out of place.
I agree. I also think that scene raises the stakes of the whole film as well, because you go, oh crap, like, they are going to stop at nothing to get these two people.
Just some, like, they're two really fucking cool actors, like Dennis Hopper. They're, like, weirdly on the other side of the spectrum. So, like, Dennis Hopper plays, like, the kind of straight man. He's, like, the most normal character in this film.
Yeah.
And he gets some of the best, like, lines before he's ultimately, you know, fucking whacked in the head.
Yeah, he's murked.
And Christopher Walken is just, I mean, it's, well, he's Christopher Walken.
First of all, he's Christopher Walken.
Yeah, so Yeah, I think that would be the first scene.
Yeah.
Second scene is probably the kind of climax of the movie, the whole bit with Patricia Arquette and James Gandolfini like talking and then fighting in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Like in like true Tarantino fashion, like it's fucking brutal in parts. Like the corkscrew in the foot is very graphic.
I love that. That's his little kind of his little fingerprint on films is just the gore and the grossness.
Yeah, like it's brutal in parts, but like it's just fun how it plays out with her ultimately just kicking his ass. Like, I mean, she gets beaten the shit out of, but in the end, she's standing, you know, shooting him in the chest with a shotgun. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Like it's just very cool, as the characters would say. Like the whole film is just cool.
It is. I love the end part of the film because there's this tension that's been building the whole way through, and they're kind of aesthetically they all have this place that works so well. So when you put a sassy hot girl in some kind of cool outfit with a gun, it looks the whole thing is just amazing.
You basically just summed up Tarantino's scripts in one sentence. hot sassy girl with gun, end.
That's the fucking plot.
That's a wrap.
That's what he said.
it's between those two.
Cool. Okay, and who is your favourite character and or actor?
I mean, besides the main two, obviously, what's great about True Romance, as you've already mentioned, is that it truly does have such like an all-star supporting cast. It has all these like amazing actors in what would otherwise be like throwaway roles.
Yeah.
Like as we've mentioned, Brad Pitt, Gary Oldman. Samuel Jackson's in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
They're all in this film, which I think is saying something. And I think that does like credit the film to some of its like kind of cult appeal. And certainly its like longevity and kind of ongoing popularity, I think.
Yes. Because different people will discover it for different reasons.
Yeah, that's true. But when it comes to my favourite, or I guess the best performance, I mean, it's got to be, it just has to be Patricia Arquette, doesn't it?
Oh, she's like, so good!
She's just great in it as Alabama
Worley.
Yeah. Obviously, like, Christian Slater is equally is great in it, and really you couldn't have one without the others. The two kind of play off each other so well and have such, like, chemistry.
Their chemistry is so good, yeah. And I think they are both so perfectly cast for their roles.
Yeah, they have this like back and forth, and you know, she's obviously very in your face and loud with her like style and like kind of personality, and she's kind of fruity and playful, and
yeah,
whilst he's like a little bit more reserved, you know, like kind of quietly confident, bit of a charmer. These two dynamics just play off each other like quite well.
Yeah,
like their characters are written in such a way and develop such like a strong sort of like almost like, I mean, they like they're portrayed in the film as kind of like soulmates, like destiny.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of really hard not to root for them and get like really involved with them, even though like their morals are a little bit like loose.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. You know, because ultimately it's a romance film, but with this really complicated storyline. And rather than the storyline being like, oh, well, life just tore us apart and we couldn't be together and then we came back together, it's like, no, life is trying to kill you two, but no one gives a crap about whether or not you're in a relationship right now. Like,
that is true.
You've just stolen a load of drugs and
they kind of almost like kind of trauma bond.
Yeah,
which is interesting for like a relationship and a especially like a written character development to like kind of spearhead a narrative. Yeah. It's like really interesting.
And I think because they commit to one another so early on, like I kind of,
yeah, it's true. It's like in the first 15 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah,
they've got like that little scene on the roof.
On the roof, where she goes,
yeah, like, she just kind of,
she's like,
comes up.
I love you. I think you're amazing.
Yeah, if I was to pick a standout, it's got to be Patricia Arquette. Yeah. She, I mean, she's just iconic in this. There's no other word for her.
No,
like, she's,
and her outfits as well, just.
Oh yeah, she radiates that. I mean, it comes in with this tropical theme that I was talking about. Like, it's kind of, I think they relate it to Florida, because don't they go into Florida in the film?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so much fun, and like all like the outfits, like, I mean, especially hers, but like not just hers. Like, I mean, Brad Pitt's looking fly, like in the stoner like t-shirts, like Gary Oldman's rocking the pimp uniform. Like, it's just done.
Yeah, I love it because I think what is so likeable about this film is the characters are so fleshed out that their aesthetics are so believable and, you know, not genuine, but you're more invested in the character because the every aspect of them is like colourful and fleshed out.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so what would you have directed differently about this film, do you think?
Okay. So I think the only thing I kind of would have played with is narrative. Like, I do think the film has a bit of a weird pacing to it.
Yeah.
Especially its third act. Like, it's just a bit random. It's not bad. It's just weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because, you know, one man wrote it and another man directed it.
Yeah.
But, how would I do it differently is, honestly, like, I'd get Christopher Walken more involved. Like, he's essentially the main villain in this film.
Yeah.
As, you know, the lesser ones, like, Gandolfini and Gary Oldman's character, like, you know, work for him.
Yeah.
And I was a bit shocked on first watch and a bit jarred at the fact that he's only in that one scene. Obviously, we talked about, you know, quality over quantity.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just jarred me off that he's only in that, albeit show-stealing scene. And I would have definitely worked his character back in for some sort of, like...
Yeah, he could have, like, rocked up.
Yeah, the third act just kind of felt a bit empty without him. Like, I was expecting him to, like, come in and, you know... Because it was, like, he was the whole, like, driving force of, you know, getting all these, like, drugs back and shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd bring him back in for some sort of, like, explosive climax.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see his demise in some sort of, you know, messed up Quentin Tarantino gory death.
They could have looped it back in with, like, him finding out about his dad's death and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I see what you mean there. Like, it would have... Because the stakes felt quite high when his dad died, and then they don't really reference it at all afterwards.
And that would also make that scene better.
Yeah.
Because it would bring back the element that it added.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Also, I think they really heavily underused Val Kilmer as Elvis, who kind of shows up as...
Honestly.
A kind of guide to Clarence, as a sort of, like, conscious or, like, mentor.
You know what, actually... thinking about it, I actually love it. It's not a scene, but I love that element of the film probably the most because it's so kooky and it pulls you, it like rips you out of any sense of reality and kind of puts you in this cartoon world. I think
it puts you in Clarence's headspace as the protagonist, doesn't it?
Yeah, but also I think Tarantino does this in quite it's quite a smart way of doing it in a narrative way. It's such a colourful and bright film with the characters and the storylines. You can almost feel the sort of, like, you know, the pow and the wow of what you get on a comic book strip.
Yeah, that's great.
And then you get these little cameos from Elvis and they do kind of pull you into this sort of cartoon like world of and I think that's why it's so fun, because it's like watching a real life cartoon or a real life comic.
Yeah, it's very wacky. Like, it's, those scenes are weird because they ground his character by making the film itself more whimsical.
Exactly, I agree.
So it's like this weird contrasting element, which completely just... It's one of those weird... And I think that's why this film is so, like, cult.
Yeah.
Because it's so, like, weird. Like, everything's a bit like a puzzle. Like, two different... It's like getting two different puzzle boxes and somehow making a puzzle with all the different pieces. Like, everything just seems to click in, like, a weird way that it shouldn't. But, like, it does.
Well, that is what a cult film is, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Weird things that don't fit, that just somehow do. And also the aesthetics of the film as well, like the neon lights and everything.
Oh, yeah.
All of that kind of stuff. I think
I would have kept that exactly the same. I definitely wouldn't have changed that.
I would not have changed a single thing about the aesthetics.
It's too much fun. It's very 90s. It's very much a product of its time.
Absolutely.
I don't think this film could have been made anywhere other than the early 90s.
Okay, right, genre-specific question. So I'm going to relate this to Tarantino because even though he didn't direct the film, he wrote the film.
Yeah, it is a Tarantino film. It's more a Tarantino film than a Tony Scott film.
Yes, yeah. It just has that feeling to it.
Well, he just, even in his scripts, he's just very domineering and he likes what he likes and, you know, he puts that across.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so my genre-specific question is, if you were Quentin Tarantino and you were in the director's chair...
Where are my feet?
Where are your
feet? Where are the women? Where are their feet?
Do you think you... I know this is a bit of a weird question.
Oh, I'll get your socks off.
Because I know you love horror so much. How would you turn True Romance into a horror film?
Oh, You're going to make me giddy with this question. Many, many ways could I could have a lot of fun with this.
This is a good question for creativity.
He kind of carries a dark aura already, so like you could turn Christian Slater's character into either a vampire or a werewolf.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm.
I feel vampire energy.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with the whole Elvis thing as well.
Yeah, definitely. Or like you could make him just a fucking psychopath who like hallucinates and sees shit. Like you could make him like a schizo.
I like that.
You could make them both schizos.
Oh, easily.
You could make everybody in this film a schizo.
Yeah. She would be a great like Bride of Dracula sort of thing.
Oh yeah. Elvira. Like you could make her you could make her a ghost.
Oh.
Spooky prostitute ghost who haunts her clients.
Spooky prostitute ghost.
Marries. Oh, that, well, like this kind of sounds like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde-ish. So like,
yeah.
You could make it into like a myth, like about this like whore who fell in love with her man and like drove across the country and they end up like dying horribly. And now they haunt that, you know, purple Cadillac they drove.
Woo! I like that.
What else? I mean, there's too many. How would you make it into a horror film?
Oh, I don't know. I would maybe, rather than go down the supernatural route, I would have a twist at the end where rather than driving off into the distance all in love and having a son called Elvis, sorry, spoilers alert, I would maybe have it where her sort of thing is that she makes these men fall in love with her. And
succubus.
Yeah, like takes them for everything they have, and then right at the end, like she just lets him die, and then she like goes off to the next guy. And she
are
just,
you? And then she's talking just... about personal fantasies there. You're trying to manifest, Molly.
I'm trying to manifest. Yeah, being pimped out, and then being in a massive gunfight, and then leaving this poor guy that's like given his whole life. Up to me, just on the floor, bleeding out, and I'm like, haha, this was my plan all along. You're the fifth person I've done this to in the last year and a half.
Who hurt you? I mean, should I be scared?
And then I'd maybe, it could maybe be like a supernatural thing, so she could be maybe like a witch or some kind of like demon. If we're talking in terms of like, yeah, supernatural, maybe I'd make her like Anya, where she's like from Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd make her like a revenge demon.
That would be cool.
And she's just like, she just goes around like ruining men's lives because like her pimp fucked her over and now she's a ghost.
Oh, I do love revenge ghosts. Ghost with a plan.
Ghost with, not any old ghost. This is a revenge.
That's going to be the name of our true crime ghost lore podcast.
Ghosts with a plan.
Ghosts with a plan. Great question.
All right, okay, and then this is our favourite one. It's the relates to the title of the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of hard to say what your favourite song is from this film because it's got a pretty good score by Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, that's true.
But is there a standout one to you, or is there a song that you would maybe put in? Oh, we'll move on to that, but have you got a standout favourite musical moment from this film?
Well, as you said, Hans Zimmer's score is great, and sometimes it does overpower the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like the main theme is like amazing. You know, it's playful and tropical. It kind of sums up the two protagonists' relationship,
yeah.
I guess, because it plays, you know, key moments of the film. As for songs though, like I just love the fact that Brad Pitt's character is like hitting a bong and is getting absolutely stoned to Soundgarden. Like that is such a fucking move.
Yeah. That is a big move.
It's like, I just love his character in it. He's got like maybe like three scenes in it and like five lines, and he's just amazing because obviously he's Brad Pitt, he's not gonna not steal a scene, is it?
Yeah, no, he's a big mood, and he usually plays like quite a cool person,
yeah,
that has their shit together, and in this he's just, he can't even be bothered to like answer the door.
And like I don't think he gets up off that sofa once.
No.
In the entire film. Like James Gandolfini's character comes to like investigate and see where Clarence is, and he's just like, he like kind of plays him off, and then he's just like, what's his line? But he has such a great line. He like, it made me cry like the first time I heard it because it was so fucking funny. He's like, oh, don't fucking patronize me. He's like absolutely stoned. He's like, don't talk that way to me.
Don't talk that way to me. No man.
What else is in it? Oh, like a Billy Idol, White Wedding, when they get their tattoos.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is. I think that's such a good song for that moment.
Yeah, a smooth, sexy bit of Charles and Eddie when they fuck for the first time. Yeah.
That song is that the Two Lost Birds song, or like the two the song about the birds.
Wounded Bird.
Yeah. That's a very cinematic song, and it just
very romantic.
It fits very much with the scene very well.
A cool score and soundtrack overall, but you know, I'd have to say Sour Garden. I mean, you can't beat a bit of grunge.
No, especially with that.
You just can't.
With a bit of,
especially with Stoner Brad Pitt,
a bit of Brad Pitt
added onto it as a footnote under the grunge.
Okay, and then if you were going to add some music to it, what songs would you add in to which scenes and why?
This is my favourite question we do every podcast, because we talked about creating playlists centred around a film's aesthetic and vibe, and for True Romance I think anything in a similar vein, as we said, to Billy Idol would work really well, just because it's such a cult classic. I think classic rock blended with a bit of 80s pop would suit this film.
Down
to a T.
And because it's kind of an early 90s film, it still has that remnants of 80s silliness.
Yeah.
And
the songs I would choose would have to have a playfulness to them, almost bordering on the goofy.
Yeah.
So I guess sticking with the tropical theme as well, maybe some Blondie, Tide Is High.
Oh, okay. I see that a lot.
Yeah. Some Police, Roxanne would be a great one, because obviously she's a whore.
Obviously.
I reckon Prince would slot in great to True Romance very easily. Kiss or Raspberry.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Little Red Corvette.
Yeah. Oh, some Wham. I mean, the main theme already gives me massive Club Tropicana vibes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was thinking Hungry Like the Wolf.
Oh, bit of Duran Duran.
Yeah, I think that would work quite well.
Anything slightly cool but bordering on the cheesy,
yeah,
and goofy and silly would work great.
Yeah, music made by people that would have had big shoulder pads and and a keyboard strapped around their waist that kind of looked cool while doing it.
Yeah, like a keita.
Yeah, a keita.
Yeah, like in La La Land. Yeah, something like that.
Music made by guitarists.
Yeah. I'd vibe on that.
Cool. And then finally, would you recommend this film?
Fuck yes, I would recommend it. It's such a fun watch. I mean, I had a blast with it the two times I did watch it. I mean, it's a cult classic for a reason. Everybody needs to see it at some point.
Yeah.
Just pure iconic 90s cinema.
It is pure iconic 90s cinema. And I think we've agreed, maybe not this year due to Corona.
Oh, yeah.
But at some point, if there's a costume party or a Halloween party, we're going to dress up as Clarence in Alabama, because I've already got the cow print skirt.
Yeah,
I'm ready to go.
I found his red tropical shirt and it's perfect. So I'm very on that note, I'm very, very depressed that Halloween's cancelled this year.
I'm so gutted. This was our year.
So I'm just, yeah, my whole plan now is literally just to stay in all October and watch horror films.
I like that plan. Oh, we've got to.
I mean, I do that every year anyway. So
we should do some sort of Halloween-y horror.
A special.
Special, yes.
Hell yeah.
Maybe for the whole month of October, I'll just let you take the reins and you can just tell me which horror films I need to watch.
I'd very much enjoy that.
Because, as we all know, I'm a bit of a horror virgin. I don't really... I've watched, you know, the big ones, but...
And I'm the horror daddy.
You're the horror daddy. Yeah. Okay, so Romance Week is over. And then coming up, we've got book adaptation films. So we're going to suggest our favourite book adaptations to one another to watch. And I'm super excited. So, Matt, what have you got for me next week?
Well, you're a big literature geek, and I don't know why you haven't read this book yet. It's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And it is most famously known under its film name, which is Blade Runner, which obviously is when Molly told me she hadn't seen Blade Runner, I had a bit of a mental spasm. I was I when I meet fully grown adults who haven't seen Blade Runner, I'm like, what have you done with your life? Blade Runner is such a significant film. It is so influenced and so it's influenced everything in popular culture pretty much, especially I mean obviously sci-fi, but it is such a powerful film, and if you don't like it, we're gonna have words.
Oh god, this is another one of the no pressure, but this is a deal breaker. If you don't like this film, then we can no longer be friends.
No, obviously, I mean, Blade Runner is not a film that needs an introduction, but I mean, it's got Harrison Ford in. What else do you need?
That's already.
You've got peak 80s Harrison Ford.
Okay.
So even if you don't like the film, you can just swoon over him for like 2 hours.
Okay. So yeah, next week we're going to be watching Blade Runner, and I'll be reviewing it with no pressure.
It's 5 stars and everything amazing.
Yeah, I can't say one bad word about it.
All right, thank you everybody for listening. Join us next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.